Hello. In this audio snippet, we would like to talk about a few things that are related to the last two audio recordings we have shared. They are, in essence, a bit of an epilogue to those two audio snippets. We wanted to start with a new topic, better said, to continue with a topic we had left off from a long time ago. We were thinking about continuing with the study of the or some audio recordings on the post Civil War period in America, to finish talking about certain people. And there's a certain person we have been wanting to get to for quite a long time. He was a person we wanted to contrast against Thaddeus Stevens. If you may recall from a previous recording, we talked about a man called Thaddeus Stevens, one of the greatest Americans of all time. And we wanted to contrast him against another man who could have achieved the same level of greatness if he had wanted to, but he chose not to. And we wanted to get to him as part of our meditation on the post-Civil War period and what it how it reflects the current state of, or how it led to the current state of the Republican Party in America and America in general. But we will not get to that, I think, in this recording. For some reason, I felt this blockage as if it was not the time to get back to that topic of the post-Civil War period in this recording. So this snippet may be relatively short. We just want to talk about a few stories. They're all are related more or less to the same topics, and we'll discuss them, and we will hopefully start with something new or old, shall we say, related to the Civil War period, post-Civil War period, in the next recording. So the first story we wanted to mention is a story posted on thegatewaypundit.com on the 26th of February, 2024, and it was posted by a man that we've criticized a great deal, a man named Jim Hoft, who was, I believe, one of the founders or creators of this website, thegatewaypundit.com. And the headline is so distressing. When I read it, I said, oh my goodness, here they go again. And I just wanted to share, I believe it's important to show the level of recalcitrance that these conservatives have and the level to which they have betrayed the truth in order to stand by their conservatism. The headline reads, breaking, Ukrainian intelligence chief admits Russian dissident Alexei Navalny died from a blood clot. He wasn't murdered. So I'm reading here. It says, Ukrainian intelligence chief Kirilo Budanov disappointed Western journalist on Monday who asked him about Russian dissident Alexei Navalny's death in prison in Siberia. Budanov confirmed the Kremlin's claims that Navalny died of a blood clot. Navalny was not murdered. So it says here, Krilo Budanov, he's quoted saying, I may disappoint you, but what we know is that he actually died from a blood clot. Here's another angle of Budanov speaking with reporters about Navalny, so they show another angle of a video. And then it says, the Western elites were hoping to use Navalny's death in a Russian prison in their push for World War III with Russia. This must have been a significant blow to the deep state and Biden regime, bite me regime. And then it says, as reported 1 week ago by Christine Taylor, Russian Russian democracy activist Alexei Navalny, 47, reportedly died in a Soviet-era gulag located north of the Arctic Circle on Friday, according to the Russian prison authority. Navalny leaves behind his wife, Yulia Navalnaya, and their two children. Navalny organized anti-government demonstrations and ran for office to advocate reforms against corruption in Russia and against President Vladimir Putin and his government. The globalist left used Navalny's tragic death as an excuse to ramp up their hopes for a shooting war against nuclear Russia. At the same time, they're blaming Trump for his death and attacking Trump following news of Navalny's death. And it should not surprise you that the American mainstream media is censoring significant statements by Alexei Navalny before his death. Activist Alexei Navalny became one of the key figures in the fake Russiagate conspiracy theory when he released a video linking Trump ex-campaign manager Paul Manafort to Russian oligarch Oleg Deripaska, reported by The Telegraph in February 2018. At the same time, The Telegraph had to admit the video does not specifically mention Donald Trump. In addition, Oleg Deripaska, quote, denied receiving briefings from the Trump campaign, although he admitted hiring Mr. Manafort as a consultant in previous years, unquote, The Telegraph reported. Although it was a big nothing burger, it was fit to print in the New York Times. So it says, in 2009, Navalny emerged as a leader of the Russian opposition and was portrayed as a hero by Western media. So to just as a side note, so to him, to be a leader of the Russian opposition, to be portrayed as a hero is some sort of exaggeration. Like, how dare the Western media portray this guy who is opposing a dictator, a brutal dictator, murderer, dictator. How can they dare portray him as a hero? That's kind of what he's saying between the lines. Then it says here, Navalny started an anti-corruption campaign in Russia that was supported early on by Secretary of State Hillary Clinton. And obviously, if Hillary Clinton supported it, then it must be wrong. Always that very simplistic black and white understanding of the world. If Hillary Clinton supported it, then it must be evil. Then Putin accused Secretary Clinton of supporting Navalny in 2011, saying she sent a signal to some actors in our country. At the same time, Navalny allegedly went to work for the Open Society Foundation Methadone program, which aimed to bring together actors' alliances from different spheres, as OSF documents leaked by DC Leaks showed. In 2015, George Soros supported a whole network of radical left-wing NGOs in Russia before being banned in 2015. Okay. He was closely allied with an exiled oligarch, Mikhail Khodorkovsky, who modeled his Open Russia Foundation on Soros' network. So they started saying all these things that linked them to Soros, link him to Clinton, and so forth. Then it says here, Alexei Navalny and his brother Oleg were convicted of embezzling 26 million rubles from French cosmetics firm Yves Rocher, with whom they had a Russian distribution deal 2008 to 2011. The Navalnys were represented in French court in Vannes, Brittany, by attorneys William Borton and Amélie Lefebvre of Association Sherpa, a whistleblower defense, which also defended Edward Snowden and is supported by the Clinton Foundation's Humanity United Freedom Fund and the Open Society Foundation. Also, the plaintiff was French company Yves Rocher, who was also sued for damages in France. Western media depicted it as some sort of sham trial instigated by Vladimir Putin. While Oleg was sent to prison for 3 years, Alexei Navalny was given a suspended sentence and remains free. So, Mikhail Khodorkovsky and Alexei Navalny wrote for leftist flagships The Guardian and The New York Times, where Navalny demanded sanctions against his own country over the Russian annexation of the Crimea 2014, which many Russians consider a reunification. Interesting, it says, Navalny demanded sanctions against his own country, as if to say he's a traitor to his own country, because he opposed the annexation of the Crimea. which was, if I'm not mistaken, taken away from Ukraine. And yes, of course, the Russians treat it as reunification because Russia has historically occupied Ukraine for a long time. For example, the time during which the Soviet Union existed. So obviously, they're going to see it as a reunification. To them, reunification is reabsorbing Belarus and Ukraine and maybe even Poland and Lithuania, Estonia, Latvia, and all those places. That's just reunification. And the fact that he wrote for leftist flagships, The Guardian and The New York Times, it only means that those were the only outlets that were interested in hearing from him, because conservative outlets don't care. Obviously, the way it shows, they have never really cared about oppression unless it's oppression against them. It's always been this, am I my brother's keeper attitude. So the fact that The Guardian and The New York Times were posting articles from Alexei Navalny does not necessarily mean that he is evil or that his cause, his fight for against dictatorship is evil. And it says here, Navalny also compared himself and his persecution by Putin's regime to Donald Trump and his persecution by radical Democrats in the Bite Me regime. So, what does that mean? Does that now mean that he's good because he's comparing himself to Trump? Or why do they always take only the parts that fit their agenda, their thinking, you know, because Putin is opposed by Bite Me, hence Putin is good. So anyone who opposes Putin is therefore evil, no matter what. And now when he's comparing himself to Donald Trump, instead of seeing it, oh, okay, so he is seeing that Trump is the good guy. No, now that only exposes how Trump is a victim of persecution. So they don't see anything there. So it says here, there was a comment from Navalny on January 9th, 2021, likening his treatment by Putin to that of Trump. Yes. So it says here, Navalny posted several tweets about the unprecedented abuse hurled at Donald Trump here in America, likening it to his situation in Russia. So doesn't that kind of point out that he is a person who is in support of freedom, no matter what form it takes? So it's interesting how Jim Hoft portrays Navalny as this sort of agent of the left, as a slave of Clinton and Soros. And then suddenly he ends the article by talking about how he sees the persecution of Trump as a bad thing. And this only is used to show how Trump is a victim and not Navalny. It just makes no sense. It is nonsense. The only reason why the left is the only one that pays attention to people like Navalny is because the left is the only one that seems interested in that sort of message. It's ironic. It is totally ironic that the conservatives have abandoned the fight for freedom and truth to such an extent that they have left a vacuum that only people from the left can fill out. And yes, the left may have its own agenda for supporting people like them, because they always have an agenda. They always have a self-interest at heart. But that does not take away. See, you have to forget who supports whom, who cared about what. The question is what this guy is doing the right thing? It does not matter. It's the same thing as with the war in Ukraine. As I've said a million times, I could not care less if Volodymyr Zelensky, whatever his name is, the Ukrainian leader, came out in a press conference wearing a tutu and saying he was now Vladimira and had an operation. It does not matter. Does not change the reality that that Russia should not be invading Ukraine. Ukraine is a sovereign country that wants to be free from Russian oppression. It has been under Russian oppression for decades and decades and decades under Soviet occupation. And it now deserves to be free. And all of Eastern Europe deserves to be free. If Ukraine falls, then they will start falling like a domino. And the Russian Empire will be revived. It does not matter if Zelensky likes Soros or does not like Soros or likes Clinton or does not like Clinton. See, the thing is that they in Eastern Europe, they are not involved or immersed in American politics. They see a friendly hand or someone that pretends to be friendly, and they embrace it because they don't distinguish. They don't know the difference between a leftist and a right winger here in America or anything like that. All they want is someone to help them. So if Trump shows up and says, "I'm going to help you," they're going to embrace Trump. It's as simple as that. They're not thinking in those terms. And Soros might be an evil man, but he was also he's Hungarian, if I'm not mistaken. And so he knows and whether he's evil or not, he knows the history of Russian oppression against Hungary and against the rest of Eastern Europe. And he, in his crazy mind, he may be supporting all these evil causes, but at the same time, there might be a few times when he supports the right cause. Especially a cause that from his historical perspective is clearly a cause to fight for. As a Hungarian, as Hungary, a place that was oppressed for so long by the Soviet Union, by the Russians, then it makes sense for him to support it. So it does not matter whether Soros funded anything that's related remotely to Navalny. The only thing in this story that seems to be of any relevance, potential relevance, is that accusation that he was in some corruption thing with funds, embezzling funds from French cosmetics firm Yves Rocher, with whom it says here they had a Russian distribution deal from 2008 to 2011. And it says here the Navalny's were represented in French court by the same attorneys that represented Edward Snowden, the guy that these conservatives so often defend, because he helped to leak information about the left, and I forget the details of what he leaked out, but so who knows? I don't know the details of this embezzlement situation. And it says here, yes, it was a French cosmetics firm, Yves Rocher, that filed a lawsuit in France against them. But does that mean that Putin is not involved? I don't know. I don't know, because it could have been that the evidence that was presented was evidence that was fabricated by Putin. I don't know. And the thing is that his brother was sent to prison for 3 years, it says, but Navalny was given a suspended sentence and remains free. So he was let go. So was he guilty or was he not guilty? I don't know. But regardless of, even if he did embezzle that money, I don't think he did. I don't know if he did. But even if he did, a person who is willing to sacrifice his freedom to fight for a principle is a person who is not by nature likely to engage in corruption just for the sake of corruption. See, if you're a corrupt person, you become a very selfish person. You don't fight for causes. You don't give your life in sacrifice for something invisible. This man was imprisoned. He could have lived his life and anywhere else, but he decided to stay in Russia and fight for freedom in Russia. That tells you that he's a man of principle, of a certain level of principle. He's not a person who's after money and after becoming rich and powerful. It's not consistent with the character of a man. And could have been that his brother was the one who got caught up in the thing in some form of greed, and then he got swept up in the wave or the current that his brother Oleg started up. I don't know. But the point is, I could not care less if he does a lot of... It's the same thing, for example, with Martin Luther King. Martin Luther King was an adulterer. Martin Luther King was a communist sympathizer. That's just the reality of it. Whether you want to admit it or not, it is what it is. But does that mean that we should not have supported the march on Selma or the you know, that big speech that he gave over in Washington about having a dream, even though he copied that speech from someone else? Does his philandering, and it's so disgusting that he was a philanderer like that, because he was a married man and supposedly a minister, which is shameful. And he was a communist sympathizer. You could see it towards the latter days of his time on earth, that he and that was part of what corrupted his calling and prevented him being a more impactful person in American society, impactful for good, because he sympathized with communism, with this mindset of entitlement. And even though he didn't say it out loud, he kind of imparted it in silence, the way he acted, the way he spoke. And that's why he, in many ways, also promoted resentment within Black people. The people who supported him, his inner circle, were most of them were people full of resentment. Jesse Jackson and I forget some of the names. There's a guy who is supposedly a reverend here in the New York area. I forget, Al Sharpton, that's his name. All these people full of bitterness and resentment, which comes from this communist ideology of class warfare and the oppression of the elite or the rich and powerful and that sort of thing. So he ministered that mindset, and he did a lot of damage. So he soiled his legacy because of that. So even though he did a lot of good things, he did a lot of bad things because of that. But the reason why I'm pointing him out is, it does not matter what he did, how shamefully immoral he was, how he promoted in a silent way, and sometimes in an overt way, communistic, socialistic tendencies of entitlement and all that, and class warfare. It does not matter. The good things he did were good things, and they were to be supported and honored and defended. It doesn't take his bad qualities do not take away from the good things he did, because everything should be judged on its own merit. And So all these things that are being thrown at him by this Jim Hoft in this article, trying to put him down, but the fact is, he didn't die in a mansion. He supposedly stole 26 million rubles. I don't know what that is in U.S. dollars, but I'm sure that devalued as the ruble may or may not be, it still sounds like a lot of money. He didn't live in a big mansion. He didn't die in his mansion. While he was swimming in his swimming pool or anything like that. He died in a prison in Siberia. Why? Because he was opposed to Putin and spoke out against Putin. Putin didn't put him in prison because he stole $26 million from Yves Rocher. He put him in prison because he dared to question the regime. And he died in Siberia in a prison. That's just the reality of it. Now, the thing in this article, when they point out what this Ukrainian intelligence chief said, well, first of all, it's not a rush. Was he there to see the autopsy? Not, I don't think so. But somehow he claims that he died from a blood clot. Okay, let's assume he did. I don't know how he knows this information. But let's just assume for a second that he did. Again, they're asking a Ukrainian intelligence chief about the death of a guy who died in the heart of Russia, deep in Siberian territory. How can he possibly know what happened exactly there? I don't know. Maybe he has some intelligence that somehow got all the way back to Ukraine. I don't know. But the point is, can you imagine if this had not been Navalny, had been some individual, if somebody dies of a blood clot, the first thing that the conservatives do, and I understand it because I would agree most of the time, is they point out, oh, this must be another victim of the clot shot, of the mRNA gene therapy injections that are portrayed as, quote, vaccines. So, if he died of a blood clot, being relatively young, he was not an old guy. He died of a blood clot. Why wouldn't these conservatives go where they go every single time with anyone else and go, oh, it was the mRNA gene therapy injection? And now the question is, why would this guy have the mRNA gene therapy injection? Well, it turns out these conservative idiots do not know that Putin was a strong defender of the so-called vaccines. He enforced the vaccine on the Russian people, and he was ruthless about it because he really believed in it. Yeah, but they don't talk about that, these conservatives. But so the reality is, I wouldn't be surprised if Navalny was injected several times with the so-called vaccine because it was imposed on him. So even if he was not killed. And I know he was murdered, but even if he was not like literally murdered in a literal way, he was murdered just by having been forced to take the injection, just on principle, right there. And once he was in a weakened condition because of the clot shot, there was no medical attention being given to him, proper attention. Some people have blood clots, but if they get treated, then they can survive the clot shot, the blood clot. But in this case, can you imagine that? Do you think that they were calling 999 or 911 the moment they saw that he was sick and getting the best medical attention, the best doctors to treat him? Who knows how long he lingered in a bad condition? Until he died, if in fact he died from a clot shot. So regardless, the point is that they are willing to look the other way, even when it comes to the clot shot, if it does not fit their agenda when it comes to Navalny. They do not care about freedom in other countries. They do not care, conservatives, about the freedom of other people other than conservative Americans. They don't care about anybody else. And that's why the truth has discarded them like rubbish. That's why the country that they idolize and love so much is being ravaged and destroyed. And they look up to the sky, look up to heaven, and ask, why are we going through this? And they don't understand that they have brought this on themselves. They have showed themselves to be the epitome of selfishness and self-interest. They don't care about other people being free. And the argument the was made here that the elites are wanting to push us to World War III. That's the same thing that they kept saying about Ronald Reagan. We've said this before. I remember when I was a kid, Democrats always saying, "Oh, this guy is always attacking the Soviet Union and calling them the evil empire and provoking them and poking the bear, and stockpiling nuclear weapons. I mean, this guy's going to cause World War III." They kept saying that about Ronald Reagan. And now the same argument that was being used by the leftists, the pro-communists, the pro-oppression people in America, the same argument is not being used by these worthless conservatives, selfish conservatives, who are only worried about numero uno. And numero uno is them. They don't care about anyone else. So, and as I said, at the end, this article focuses on how Navalny compares himself to Trump, and Trump is being oppressed. He posted this tweet in 2021, I think it is. It says, on January 9th, 2021, "If you replace Trump with Navalny in today's discussion, you will get an 80% accurate Kremlin's answer as to why my name can't be mentioned on Russian TV and I shouldn't be allowed to participate in any elections." And then it says, he also said, "This president will be exploited by the enemies of freedom of speech around the world, in Russia as well. Every time when they need to silence someone, they will say this is just common practice. Even Trump got blocked on Twitter." So if Navalny was equating himself to Trump, doesn't that show what's in his heart, that he's actually about freedom? But Jim Hoft ends this article with those tweets only to just because in his head all he hears is Trump is being oppressed. That's all he hears. He doesn't hear, "Oh, Alexei Navalny is recognizing the oppression of Trump, and therefore he must not be the bad guy that I think he is." He can't even go there. And he died in prison. He didn't die in a mansion, spending 26 million rubles on caviar and champagne. He still died in Russia. It's like somebody saying, "Oh, let's say one of the January 6th prisoners dies, and then all these conservatives go out and say, hey, the government killed this man and tortured him, because he defied the bite me regime." And then a leftist posts an article saying, "No, he did. The ME says that he didn't die of torture. He died of a blood clot." And all these right-wingers are lying about him and exaggerating about him. And he's not a good guy. He's an agitator. And we didn't mistreat him. He just died of natural causes of a blood clot. Wouldn't these conservatives then rise up in anger and say, "Well, the blood clot must have been because they forced him to be injected"? And any which way, it doesn't matter if he died of natural causes, you still had him imprisoned unfairly. And I know that you tortured him. See what I'm trying to say is, if we just change the names of things here, then the conservatives wouldn't say, "Oh yeah, of course, oh, he died of a blood clot. I'm sorry, I thought you had tortured him. It's okay." No. It's not okay. He was still a prisoner unfairly imprisoned. That's what they would say about a January 6th prisoner who died of a so-called blood clot. He's still a prisoner. He was not supposed to be in prison. He should have been at home with his family, getting reasonable treatment. The stress of things also adds to the blood clot accelerating his death. If it was a blood clot, I still think he was tortured and killed. And the blood clot was just one of many things that killed him. So this just shows the depth of betrayal against the truth that these people have, and the level of selfishness, just outright selfishness. They're willing to let someone die and not hold the murderers accountable just because it does not fit their agenda. Their understanding, their stupid understanding of the world. So that's one thing we wanted to talk about. Another article related was posted on the dailymail.com.co.uk, and we're going to share some stories about this. None of these stories are available on the conservative websites like thegatewaypundit.com. So just like they criticize the left-wing media for not saying certain things about Navalny, it's interesting they do the same thing in reverse. It's like, for crying out loud, it's like when they criticize the left, it's like they do the exact same things that they criticize the left for. So now these stories that I'm about to read, they're not on the conservative websites. I have to go to the dailymail.co.uk, which is, yeah, technically semi-conservative, but it's really more or less kind of leans several ways sometimes. So it says, Putin's worst nightmare, even in death, Alexei Navalny proved to be Vladimir's nemesis as huge crowds chant Russia without Putin and Putin is a killer during funeral in greatest challenge to Vladimir in years. This was posted on the 1st of March, the day before this recording, 2024, on the dailymail.co.uk. It says here, the funeral for Alexei Navalny today proved to be Vladimir Putin's worst nightmare as thousands of Russian mourners gathered in Moscow to say their final farewell. Despite a heavy police presence and a warning against dissent from the Kremlin, the huge crowds chanted Navalny's name as his coffin was carried into the Russian Orthodox Church on the outskirts of Moscow at around 11 a.m. GMT. And it says here, Navalny died on February 16th behind bars in the Arctic Polar Wolf Penal Colony, 1,200 miles from Moscow. I mean, this is not the Hawaiian resort. Must have been cold and freezing. It must have been, it can only imagine how bad it must have been. Some shouted, "You weren't afraid, neither are we." His body was displayed in an open casket for less than an hour before it was taken away again by workers to be buried at a cemetery around a mile away. Shocking footage from inside the church showed the black-clad workers holding mourners back from the coffin as people begged to be allowed to say goodbye. Just minutes earlier, his elderly parents had been seen kneeling by its side. So thousands of people. Now, if he was the evil, conniving man that the right, that conservatives want to make him out to be, would the people be out there risking their own freedom to support this man? Just like they shouted, "You are not afraid, and neither are we." Doesn't that stir the heart of conservatives for a second to make them think, yeah, maybe this man may not have been perfect, but he was fighting for freedom and he literally gave his life. He was not murdered. He didn't give his life. Well, if you're taken to a prison in Siberia, 1,000 miles away from Moscow, in a place called the Arctic Wolf, that's giving your life, even if they don't kill you. I mean, that is a sacrifice that you're giving your life. So they continue talking about the mourners and, So more pictures. All right. So, let me just read here. It is claimed that Putin was fearful of a rerun of Nobel Prize winning physicist Andrei Sakharov's farewell in 1989, which helped bring down the Soviet Union. The state and loyalist media were ordered not to cover the funeral, and most Russians have not heard the claims by Navalny's family and Western leaders that Putin ordered his death. Tens of thousands stayed after the burial to pay homage to the murdered Russian opposition leader and chant slogans backing Ukraine, opposing the war and hostile to Putin. Now, a conservative reads this and goes, oh, traitors to their own country backing the enemy. Well, it's not an enemy. It's a neighbor that wants to be free and doesn't want to be oppressed by the Russian people. And the Russian people, there are Russians who will believe that even though they're Russians, they don't have the right to go oppress the Ukrainian people. Is that a bad thing? Well, apparently to Jim Hoft it is, because he kind of hinted at that when Navalny spoke against his own country. Oh, that's not patriotic. See, it's not about patriotism. It's not about... Those are idols. It's who is on the side of truth and who isn't. That's who you should follow. You should be loyal to the truth more than to your country. If your country is with the truth, then you side with your country. If your country is against the truth, you side against your country. Simple as that. Because at the end of the day, what counts is the truth and you. You and the truth. The relationship, it's an individual relationship between you and the truth. That's all that counts. It says here, tens of thousands stayed after the burial to pay homage to the murdered Russian opposition leader and chant slogans back in Ukraine, opposing the war and hostile to Putin. The Russian special services were ordered by the Red Kremlin to carry out an operation to protect the constitutional order from threats, reported the Independent Moscow Times. The task was set to prevent a picture similar to the farewell to Sakharov. And what happened with Sakharov led to freedom for the Russian people, because it led to the fall of the Soviet Empire. So they continued talking about details of all the people who were there. It says here, one woman who flew 900 miles from Perm, P-E-R-M, to Moscow said, I had high hopes for this man. He was very strong, very brave. I'd like to see people today who also support him. The pain in my heart is such that I cannot describe it so hard, she added. So these are people who are tired of being oppressed and want to be free. You would think that a conservative who supposedly talks about freedom, all that freedom crap day and night would empathize. But no, they're Russians. I don't care. And I don't want to get involved. We don't want to get into World War III. I don't want to have to pay a price for these people. So who cares? That's the conservative's attitude. Another woman added, for us, it was hope for a brighter future, not for North Korea. This is the only thing we can do now is to pay tribute to the memory, to keep it. It says here, the dissident's widow, Yulia Navalnaya, earlier said she feared the funeral could be disrupted by further arrests. And then Putin's spokesman Peskov has criticized the accusations made by her and some Western leaders as vulgar. Well, see, Putin, you would not be exposed to this criticism if you didn't have Navalny in a Siberian prison, a gulag, 1,000 miles from Moscow. See, no one would be accusing you of anything if you didn't have him there. So it's ridiculous. So more things here. So the important thing is that the people of Russia came out in protest, and the conservative websites didn't say a thing about it. I kept looking. There was nothing there. Maybe I missed it, but it was nothing there. Another article on the dailymail.co.uk, dozens of Alexei Navalny supporters are detained by Russian police after thousands flocked to Putin critics' funeral. So they did start arresting people. This was posted on the 1st of March, 2024. At least 67 people have been detained by Russian police as thousands across the country mourn the death of Alexei Navalny. So see, a man who stirs bravery in his fellow man, and the conservatives, instead of praising him, say, okay, I don't care what's going on. I know this guy is fighting for freedom and we'll support him. Instead of that, they are trying to smear him, trying to make him look an embezzler, some sort of a manipulator. When he was fighting for freedom, and the people of Russia who were there, they could see him. They are used to corruption. They know what corruption looks like. They don't see corruption in this guy. If he was an embezzler, some sort of evil person, they would be quick to notice it. But they know this guy's fighting for them, and that's what. And they were arrested. Imagine people being arrested for protesting in favor of Trump. Wouldn't the conservatives just be outraged about that? But see, let's do what Navalny did. You know, just replace, just change some names. Dozens of Trump supporters, instead of Navalny supporters, dozens of Trump supporters are detained by BiteMe's police after thousands flocked to BiteMe's critics' funeral. If that had happened, the conservatives would be in an uproar. They are in an uproar over the January 6th prisoners. And I can assure you, badly as they've been treated, and they've been treated very badly, I don't think the January 6th prisoners are going through what Russian prisoners go through in these Russian gulags in Siberia. I don't think it comes close. But okay, so that's another story that's not on the conservative websites. Then there's another story on the dailymail.co.uk. That's where I have to go to see this. Posted on the 1st of March as well. It says, "I don't know how to live without you, but I will try to make you proud of me," unquote. Alexei Navalny's wife, Yulia, releases touching video tribute to her husband after she was forced to stay away from his funeral. Do you think she's milking this for money or fame? Conservatives, do you think that's what she's doing here? She's risking her life by talking like this, but she doesn't care anymore. And I see a picture of her with him, the now dead husband, and her two kids. I could be wrong. Maybe I'm deceived. I don't see evil there. I don't see, you can see it in their faces. When people are evil, you can see it in their faces. But I don't see that here. I see people who are just trying to live a normal life and who are fighting for something. At least that's what I see. So she says, she has taken over as a new opposition leader following her husband's death. The life in the political limelight is said to be a big shift for Yulia, who once told Russia's Harper Bazaar that her key task was caring for the couple's children and home. On Wednesday, she addressed the European Parliament in Strasbourg, France, shortly after Navalny's aides announced that he had arranged his funeral after spending more than a week trying to retrieve his body and find a suitable venue. She said, "I thought that in the 12 days since Alexei's murder, I would have time to prepare for this speech. But first, we spent a week getting Alexei's body and organizing his funeral. Then I chose the cemetery and coffin. I'm not sure yet whether it will be peaceful or whether police will arrest those who have come to say goodbye to my husband." And in her speech to the European Parliament, she spoke of what her husband went through and what her intentions are for Russia. She said, "He was starved in a tiny stone cell, cut off from the rest from the outside world, and denied visits, phone calls, and then even letters, and then they killed him. Even after that, they abused his body and abused his mother. He was the opposite of everything boring. This is the answer to the question. If you really want to defeat Putin, you have to become an innovator. You have to stop being boring. Putin must answer for what he has done with my country. Putin must answer for what he has done to a neighboring peaceful country. And Putin must answer for everything he has done to Alexei. My husband will never see what a beautiful Russia of the future will look like, but we must see it. And I will do my best to make his dream come true. So the thing is that this is what the conservatives are opposing. So now that we've talked about, and this is painful. This hurts. This is a betrayal to the truth. It is probably the most painful betrayal. This Navalny incident not only exposed the oppression of the Russian people by Putin, it also exposed the callousness, the callous betrayal against the truth that conservatives in America have committed. And it's painful. And that's why we said in the previous one of the previous audio snippets, we titled it the most painful of betrayals. So now these conservatives who have betrayed the truth now think that the truth is going to support them to bring freedom to America, just as they're turning their back to the freedom of the Russian people. And pretending like it's not there because it does not fit their very simplistic understanding of the world. Then they turn around and say to the truth, "Truth, you will rescue us from our oppression." And I'm going to read this article, which is so sad to read. It's pathetic. On thegatewaypundit.com, once again, Wayne Root, that's the name of the person who I think wrote this article. Yes, Wayne Root, R-O-O-T. Wayne Root wrote, "Do you believe in miracles? Something supernatural is happening with President Trump. We are all witnessing, quote, the Trump miracle." So, and then he makes a reference to the miracle on ice, the 1980 Winter Olympics, you know, when the American hockey team beat the Russians in, beat the Soviet Union, interestingly enough. Interesting that he's making a reference to the 1980 Winter Olympics, where America had a miracle on ice, as it was called, defeating the Russians in the semifinals against the Russians. And now they're defending the Russians. Do you see the irony there? You know, they don't see it. They okay. So it says here, you just have to be open to seeing and believing in miracles. I believe a miracle sent directly by God is happening right in front of us right now. You just have to open your eyes. President Trump is that miracle. He's sometimes crude and rude. He offends so many. He angers so many. The powers that be want him stopped at any cost, just like Navalny. Even if they have to frame him by making up crimes that never happened, just like Navalny. He faces so many indictments and trials, just like Navalny. He faces over 700 years in prison. He's being fined hundreds of millions of dollars and banned from conducting business. If he doesn't spend the rest of his life in prison, he could end up losing his empire to bankruptcy. He's painted as Hitler and KKK and a white supremacist. We're told he's a threat to democracy. If elected, his critics say he will destroy America, blah, blah, blah. So he's talking about all the things going against him. Foreign governments are desperate to stop him. And women call him sexist and blah, 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 blah. Yet, after all of that, President Trump holds the lead over Joe Biden in virtually every national poll. How is this possible? So he talks about some nephew that he has who was a young doctor in California. And he says, my nephew was working at a medical office in Los Angeles, and he witnessed what he describes as a supernatural miracle. The news came on the television in the doctor's office. The topic was Trump's primary landslide in Michigan. He was expecting either groans or hatred from everyone in the office, but then he witnessed something that shocked him like never before. Someone in the office cheered Trump, and then another. Soon the entire medical office was cheering and celebrating President Trump. Everyone, patients, staff, doctors. Once they realized it was safe to express support for Trump, everyone let it all out. Everyone admitted they are on Trump's side in Los Angeles. My nephew, the doctor, said, "Uncle Wayne, it was a miracle. I never thought I'd ever see anything like this. Something supernatural is happening." So then he says, second example, "My childhood best friend is a strong believer in God, but he's not political. Yesterday, he reached out to me via text to say, 'I'm going to say something very odd. Now, I don't believe Trump can be stopped. He's touched by God. He's superhuman. He's got something supernatural supporting him. I don't think anyone can stop him. In my lifetime, I've never seen a human being on the earth surrounded by this supernatural force. Trump doesn't even get aged like all the other presidents in history. He looks the same as 8 years ago," and blah, blah, blah. So that's all the evidence he has, and then the article more or less kind of peters out, and it's done. That's all. See, when I went through this article, I tried to go, okay, is there some sort of evidence? Some no, it's just the feeling that that he's supernatural, and that despite everything, yes, of course he has strong support because he won in 2020. He won convincingly in 2020. It got stolen from him. If the election were held today, he would win convincingly. And if he lives, and I hope he doesn't, I hope he dies before November 5th, but if he lives before November, up until November 5th, and the election is held, he would win again by a landslide. Clearly he would win, just like he did in 2020, but he's not going to win. Yes, he's going to win, but he's not going to win because they're just going to stuff the ballots with enough mail-in ballots to make sure he doesn't win. Because whatever the hell miracle they see happening is a useless miracle. The problem is conservatives are trapped in this little microscopic world where their understanding of the world is the only truth there is. So they get energized and they get happy when anything closely resembles something that validates them, and they see these little signs here and there, some good things supposedly, and they think that's the proof that the miracle is happening and that they are on the right side of history and on the right side of the truth. And it's falsehood. There's nothing different. Things are even actually worse than they were in 2020. This is the miracle guy who said, "I want to compromise on abortion because you cannot win elections without compromising on abortion." But that doesn't seem to count here, does it? This is the same guy whose campaign managers think that the solution to winning is ballot harvesting, just like the Democrats, that's going to overcome any fraud. That this is the same naive person, the same guy who promoted the injections and is still promoting the injections. To this day, he has not apologized for bringing that poison into the country and promoting it. He has not apologized for enabling Tony Fauci and all the horrors that happened during his last year in the White House. This is the miracle that these people are waiting for. The same guy who surrounded himself with all these traitors, who put Bill Barr as Attorney General. This is the guy. This is the miracle. This is the best God can come up with. Really? This is God's solution to the problems in America? Is this what Wayne Allyn Root say? The same guy who has no idea, and the guy who says that there's some lawsuit or something that he filed to ask the Supreme Court to protect him, to give him immunity as president some of the things that he's being accused of. And yes, they are false accusations. I believe that. But what is his solution? He says, I have to be declared immune because I am president. And see, this is the same guy who was saying that that they should jail Hillary Clinton. Remember when he was campaigning in 2016, saying, I'm going to lock her up, I'm going to lock her up. And now he's saying presidents are supposed to be immune. That's not the right attitude, because how can a guy drain the swamp if he thinks that people in certain positions of power are exempt from being punished for evil deeds? No wonder he let Hillary Clinton off the hook after he won, because he actually believes that if you're in certain positions of power, you have to have a certain level of immunity. How can you set a president to drain the swamp, as the conservatives call it, in Washington, if you start off with the idea that certain people are supposed to have immunity even though they commit heinous crimes? You see what I'm saying? So it's like, this is a selfish man, a self-centered man. Like, you don't mess with me, because he is an elitist, and I've said this before, and this is a reality. This man, Trump, is an elitist. And he thinks that if you're in a certain position, you have certain privileges, and you should be protected because of those privileges. How can a man who is an elitist, not as elitist as all the other people, but he's elitist, he has elitism in him. How can a man with elitism clean out the elitism in Washington? It's impossible. This man, he is living on the fumes of all the investment that the truth seekers have made in sacrifice on his behalf. He's living on the fumes of that, but his tank is empty. He's just running on fumes. And these conservatives just refuse to understand it. If he were, he's not going to make it back to the White House. But even if he made it, he's not going to change things. It's just going to make things worse, because the liberals are going to just make every effort to destroy the country and make things a million times worse for all of us. It's ironic, but to a certain extent, it's actually safer for him not to make it to the White House, because he's not empowered to fight once he gets there. He showed it for 4 years. He's too stupid to realize who is his enemy, who his enemies are. Does not understand. He kept calling Paul Ryan a great guy. He kept calling Mitch McConnell, a great guy. This is a guy who has no understanding, no ability, and none of his speeches are penetrating in terms of having something of substance to say about how to change the country, how to restore the country. None of his speeches have any of that. So how can you expect him to be the miracle worker, the one who's going to make, who's going to eliminate all the disasters that the liberals have introduced into the country? What he can't fight. So it's an insult to God, to Wayne Allen Root's God, to say that his God is, that this is what his God's miracles look like. I mean, this is an insult to his God. No awareness. It's naivete, just complete naivete. And just to finish, I just wanted to go to another website that I usually go to, not so much anymore, but because I'm getting sick and tired of these conservative websites. It hurts too much to see so much stupidity and so much betrayal. But there's another website that I go to every now and then called citizenfreepress.com. Citizenfreepress, all one word, .com. And for some reason, they usually have, like a Drudge Report type layout, you know, just the links. It's pretty simple, a simple interface. But for some reason, in this, I'm looking at it right now, at least today, they decided to have these huge links, multi-linear links, because usually the link is short, like half a line or a few words. But now they let me just read the three huge multi-line links at the top of their page right now, at the time of this recording. It says, kaboom, Trump leads Bite Me in every state, a new Bloomberg poll of seven swing states. Trump leads 50-41 in North Carolina, by 6 points in Arizona, Nevada, Georgia, and Pennsylvania, by 4 in Wisconsin, and 2 in Michigan. There is nothing Democrats can do. The 2024 reckoning is coming. But see, the thing is, they start with the kaboom. Like this is some sort of high school website. Kaboom. Like, oh yeah, oh we're doing great. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter if he's leading by 6 points or 8 points in however many states. The liberals are going to out-fraud them and quote, win. Because there's nothing that Trump or anyone has really suggested that truly addresses the root of the problem. And the root of the problem is the U.S. Constitution that allows states to define their own election rules. And no one addresses that. You don't deal with that. Forget about everything else. If Wayne Allen Root was right about the miracles, why isn't the House of Representatives controlled by the Republicans? Why aren't they passing any laws to clean out the voter rolls, or to standardize the procedures about vote counting and not allowing observers to be kicked out of the counting place? And why aren't they doing anything? Why aren't they addressing the issue of over-the-top mail-in balloting? Why aren't they addressing why aren't they passing laws to require proof of citizenship, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera? If something like that were happening, then I would go, okay, maybe there will be no fraud. But none of that is happening. It's all self-delusion. It's naivete. Okay, the second link that's being shown here is a multilinear one. It says, editor's note, this is called a MAGA winning streak. Take a moment to consider the last 5 days. SCOTUS, you know, the Supreme Court of the United States, SCOTUS delays Jack Smith's January 6th fever dream until after the election. Judge Cannon in process of delaying documents case. Fannie and Nathan likely to be removed from case, delaying and perhaps ending RICO persecution of Trump. Ronna Romney out of our lives with Mitch close behind. And blowout Bloomberg poll today showing Trump leading in all seven swing states. This is a week to celebrate for America's future. So, that's all one link. All that I read is one link. And they have the need to show it, to highlight it, because usually they just, you know, do a very small summary in the link, and then you click on the link, and then you get all the details. But they are so hard pressed to show how conservatives are winning that they have to show it in the link. A third link I'm going to read, huge link. It says, victory still to come includes SCOTUS denying Colorado and all 14th Amendment challenges. SCOTUS likely to side with Fisher and Fisher versus United States and throw out cooked up Enron January 6th obstruction charge against Trump and 300 fellow political dissidents. And the ultimate victory in November. We must turn out the vote in numbers never seen and only imagined in the warped skulls of career political consultants. 100 million votes for Trump. I said 100 million votes for Trump. And I read that and I go, oh my goodness. Delusion. So they're having these apparent victories, and their victories in terms of not so much victories, it's like the delay of a judgment or not wanting to hear some sort of trial. That's all that it is. But the January 6th prisoners are still in prison. And Trump is still out of the White House. And the illegal aliens are still just flooding into the country by the hundreds of thousands. Nothing has changed. This is all just self-delusion. And they're grasping at straws, trying to find something to validate that the truth is on their side, because they know the truth has left them. See, they betrayed the truth, so now the truth has turned the truth has turned the back on them. They know it. They know the truth has abandoned them. So they're trying in their mind to convince themselves that the truth is on their side. But the truth is fed up with them. The truth is sick and tired of them. Because of that, this Navalny thing was like almost, there was something happened with Navalny's death that just completely broke something in America. Just completely broke it. America was already dead, but what I'm saying is America reached a deeper level of betrayal and decline the moment conservatives reacted to Navalny the way they did here in America. And they know it. They feel it. I know they feel it. And that's why they feel this need to validate themselves and know the truth is on our side. Yes, God is on our side. God is going to do this miracle. He's so awesome. And then suddenly, Trump will be dead. And then they'll go, what about... And then I'll ask, hey, Wayne Allen, what about the miracle? I guess your miracle is dead, right? Literally. Look at him. He's dead. And I think he will be dead. I think they are accelerating his death by doing the betrayal that they did with Navalny, and by exalting Trump and saying, no, he is the proof that we're not traitors. Then the truth will say, hey, here's your proof that you're not traitors. And Trump will be dead. I'm convinced. It's like they're pushing Trump to his death by all of this. And Trump is, you know, doing a lot of pushing on his own, but I think they're going to help him out. And as I said, this is going to be like a Herod moment. Like in the Bible, it talks about Herod in the book of Acts in chapter 12, if I'm not mistaken. It talks about Herod giving a speech and the people cheering him on and saying Herod is great and all that. And then suddenly, boom, he's gone. And he's dead because Herod crossed the line that day, and Trump has crossed the line, and it will be manifested, I believe, in something like that. So that's all we wanted to say today. I thought it was going to be much shorter than it turned out to be, but I do believe that the time has come to more or less, to a certain extent, stop following, at least for me, news stories. I feel I'm being called away from that now. And we're going to go back to talk about some history, hopefully in the next recording, with what's happening with what happened with the post-Civil War period in America. Just finish out some of the threads we left dangling, you could say, from the past. But I really think that the sky has darkened over America. It's just dark. Everything is dark. There's just death and despair in the air. There is no hope. And the darker, it's ironic because I felt the darkness even deeper. The level of darkness and death is just so much deeper now. And these conservatives are making every effort to to say the opposite, like, no, we're fine, we're gonna be okay. No, you're not gonna be okay. We're not okay. And it's just now, it's just, at least personally, just a matter of finding a way to get out of this place. The level of personal oppression and harassment that I have experienced is just ridiculous. I know this country's dead. It is just totally dead. And I, as I said, I do believe that the time to talk about news stories and things like that is apparently coming to an end. At least following them in the way we have so far. I think now we'll just go a little historical and talk about certain things and then talk about certain foundational principles. I think we have to get to talk about the branches of government and how the division should be made between them. We have said many times that the Constitution, one of its biggest mistakes is the ambiguity with which it defined the judicial branch. Well, it didn't even define it. There really is no definition of the judicial branch in any significant way in the Constitution. It's just mentioned. And some things are said, you know, some specific literal things, but other than that, there's no definition. It's not given a shape or a form. So we have to define what the judicial branch should really look like. We have to define what the executive branch should really look like, because that's also very undefined. We have more or less talked a little bit about how the legislative branch should be reshaped in some of the earlier audio snippets. But I think we have to revisit the other two, especially the executive branch, because that one is the most complicated to define. And then sometimes I wonder, should we have the branches the way we have them right now? Was that another mistake? To be frank, I've always found the executive, judicial, and legislative branch division to be a little, like, there's something wrong there, like there's something missing, like the founding fathers didn't quite get it right. But that's not the metaphysically correct way to define, to form a government. It's like there's something missing there, but we'll talk about all of that in future audio snippets as we finish out talking about the post-Civil War period and maybe we also will talk a little bit about 1928. I think we've shared before that there was something that happened on September the 18th, 1928, that was very significant. It's like we crossed a certain point at that time, and it kind of prepared us for our death. And we ended up as a country dying 95 years later to the day, on September 18th, 2023, when the death of the country was completed. I always say September the 8th and September the 6th as the dates of death that the country died, but officially the complete death happened on September the 18th, 2023. But 95 years earlier, it's as if something happened. And maybe we will be led to talk about that as well. Because after September 18, 1928, almost a year later, a year and a few days later, we had the stock market crash, which led to the Great Depression, which led to the new New Deal, and all these other things that were introduced that started the fast decline of the Republic under FDR, and we started going downhill, and then we ended up dying. We'll go historical, I believe, from now on, and kind of talk more about abstract things than about the things happening in the news, because it's like a line has been crossed with the Navalny situation, and the betrayal has just become too painful, and the naivete is just rising and rising. So we'll just basically, if we continue sharing stories, we'll just be repeating the same thing over and over again. The level of betrayal and the naivete of conservatives. We appreciate you listening to these to this recording. We're grateful and thank you very much for listening.